Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Mom Hour Voices, a special series on the Mom Hour showcasing diverse voices from across the motherhood community. I'm Megan Francis, and on this Voices episode, we're doing something a little different. I'll be joined by Catherine DeVries, a mom of 3 and a member of our contributor team, and Catherine is actually going to interview me about seasonal family life. We're talking about everything from what kind of seasonal activities we enjoy doing with our kids, as well as the ones we don't enjoy so much, how we feel about seasonal decorating, and how different it can be to parent year-round when you live in an area that has distinct seasons, like I do in Michigan, versus a place where the climate is steadier, like Catherine experiences in Southern California. I'm also offering some tips and advice on how to help kids transition between seasons, how to make those long winter stretches feel less dreary, and how to bring seasonality into your decor without spending a ton of money. Catherine and I had such a fun talk, and I know you're going to love today's episode of the Mom Hour Voices.
We are welcoming back Hiya Kids Vitamins as a sponsor today. And Megan, I know our listeners are here for all the discussions about adjusting to new seasons and creating new routines and rituals. I also think that kids are more receptive to small changes in routines when they're rolled out with the new season. So like maybe meals went off the rails during summer, but hey, now we start the day with a good breakfast and a yummy Hiya chewable vitamin before school. Poof, new routine.
I love that. And you know, Sarah, it's just a part of parenting that routines shift and change. We get out of good habits and back into them, and there's no shame in that game. But fall is a perfect time to reset healthy routines, and Hiya Kids Vitamins are an easy way to make that happen. Hiya Vitamins were created by two dads who realized that the kids' vitamins they saw in stores were filled with sugar and gummy junk. So they spent 3 years consulting with top pediatricians, nutritionists, scientists, and parents to formulate a superpower chewable that helps fill gaps in modern kids' diets and that tastes great.
Hiya Vitamins are made with a blend of fruits and vegetables and then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals. They're non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, and nut-free, and they ship right to your door on a pediatrician-recommended schedule. Plus, we've worked out a special offer with Hiya to get you started. You're going to get 50% off your first order. Just go to hiyahealth.com/momhour or enter code momhour at checkout. That's hiyahealth.com/momhour to get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
We are welcoming back Vionic as a sponsor today, which is so perfect for an episode where we're talking about seasonal change and how it works its way into all kinds of areas of our lives. I mean, Sarah, my feet very much appreciate the approach of autumn. They appreciate it so much, they'd like to honor it with a waterproof Cecily ankle boot from Vionic.
Oh my gosh, I love that booty, Megan. And I very much agree. Fall means fun footwear, even here in California. And with Vionic shoes, you don't have to choose between looking cute and feeling comfortable, friends. Every single shoe, whether it's a hiking boot or a pair of heels, features a podiatrist-developed footbed that delivers 3-zone comfort. That means every pair of Vionics has a deep heel cup for stability, cushioning under the ball of your foot, and ultimate arch support for uplifting overall foot contact. Vionic shoes are also clinically proven to help with plantar fasciitis and other heel pain.
We know that trying out a new brand means finding the size, fit, and style that works for your life. And Vionic knows this too, friends, which means they let you buy a pair of shoes, wear them around your real life for up to 30 days, including outside, and then return them for a full refund if you're not totally thrilled. Plus, we're going to get you free shipping on your Vionic order this fall, so there's really no reason not to try them out. Just go to vionicshoes.com and use promo code themomhour at checkout. That's VIONICshoes.com and use promo code themomhour at checkout to get free shipping. Hey, Catherine, so happy to have you on the show.
So happy to be here.
So this is really exciting. As I kind of teed up in the intro, we're going to turn the tables a little bit and you're going to actually be interviewing me today. So I will attempt to relinquish the reins and not try to control the conversation. But before we jump into that, Catherine, tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your family.
Yeah. So I live in Southern California, although I am originally from the Chicago area and lived on the East Coast for a while. And I have 3 kids, 1, 3, and 5, and 2 dogs.
So I imagine that the experience of seasonal living, seasonal decorating, seasonal parenting is a little bit different where you are now than where you were before.
Oh, for sure. And it's one of those things where you kind of forget that the seasons have changed. And sometimes we go straight from summer to like Christmas and just skip everything in between, which is, you know, sometimes one of the things I miss about living in other places across the country. So I can't wait to talk to you about it.
Yeah. And it's really the only experience I've ever had that I've had 4 distinct seasons and pretty dramatically distinct in the upper Midwest. So, all right, Catherine, well, I'm going to hand this over to you and let you kind of get started with the questions that you have for me. I'm excited.
Yeah. So my first one is kind of the most obvious one, but as I have had children, it's been interesting to me because seasons that were my favorite before have now kind of become my least favorite. And I'm wondering if you currently have a favorite season and if that has changed over the course of having kids and then having your kids go through these different, you know, ages and stages.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think fall is still kind of the undisputed favorite. I think that's pretty common for people who live in a place like this. It's just beautiful. You're ready for like a break from the heat. And there's so many associations that go along with the crunchy leaves and the crisp air and the boots and the sweaters and all that. So that has remained my like undisputed favorite. But what I will say is that when my kids were really little, I had a really hard time with like later winter all the way up till the end of spring. Mm-hmm. And I would say from any like after Christmas through like March, sometimes into April. And that's because spring can just be messy, really, really messy when you have little kids tracking muck in and out. It's still really cold. The weather is unpredictable. So you may end up with things like you thought they were all out of snowsuits and now you got to get them all back out. And then the weather can just be like kind of chronically disappointing. I would especially say March, April, it seems like it's going to get warm, but then it doesn't. So those for years were just not my favorite. And now that my kids are getting older, it's such like there's so much less hassle involved that I feel like I'm rediscovering the things that I enjoy about a really cold winter day or kind of a mucky spring day. It just, there were definitely years where I was not feeling it. And while the winter holidays have always been great, I have always loved those as a little kid through being a mom, but those are starting to kind of fade a little bit into the background as like the focal point of the year, which I just think it's kind of sad, but like probably needed because the Christmas holidays have been like mom prime time for me for so long.
Right.
That it's nice to have a little break from that. So I'm curious, I know your kids are still a lot younger than mine. Have you experienced similarly?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the major reasons, honestly, that my husband and I moved to Southern California was because of that. We went to school in upstate New York and that exact season that you're describing was like misery. I feel like I still have nightmares about it. and I, as a teacher, it's funny, I experienced that too. That's kind of like the time of the year where everybody is just on their last leg, like in the classroom yes. and at home. But yeah, I think fall for sure is something that we miss here in Southern California. I still try to do all of we try to drive and find fall for the kids, because there's something so nostalgic about that, but for sure, I agree. So my next question for you, which I think is interesting because you didn't really mention summer in your last, in what you just said before, is I'm wondering if you felt like your parenting changed a lot during the summer, especially when your kids were little. I'm just kind of at the phase where we're starting a real school cycle. And mm-hmm. I definitely noticed this year that I did a lot of things just by necessity differently in the summer. And I'd love to hear your take on that, whether that was true for you.
Oh yeah, for sure. I would actually say that when they were really little, there wasn't that much of a change. I mean, I like summer. I like it just fine. I don't think it's my absolute favorite season, but it feels like in Michigan, it's like the most necessary season because you've just now come out of that disappointing on and off long spring thing that happens. And then you get in the summer, it's like, okay, we can just breathe. I just take it for granted. I don't think about it too much while it's happening. And then you get to the middle of February and you're like, oh my gosh, I really need that again. But I feel like when my kids were really, really little, it didn't change our lives a whole lot, except that we were outside more. Definitely when they were all in school, that was when I feel like we would get to that last day of school. And Sarah and I just did an episode where we were talking about, like we were having a conversation about managing paperwork and things like that at the end of the school year. And I distinctly remember the year I decided I just wasn't going to deal with backpacks at the end of the year. I was just going to put them away with everything still in them and deal with them like at the end of August. And that was kind of, that was like the mindset I would have by the time we got to that last week of May or first week of June or whenever the school year wrapped up. So we would just like slide into summer. We would just collapse into summer.
Yeah.
Just like, bleh. And the wheels would seriously fall off the bus when they were really little, particularly. I think it's getting better now that they're older because they just have more going on. So I can't loosen the reins quite the same way. And they don't have like little friends they're running around the neighborhood with the way they did when they were in elementary school. But for sure, in that elementary school year, like time frame, it was very much like a really let the reins go and relax and sleep in and stay up late and snack more and eat junky food and ice cream and all of those things. Mm-hmm. And I think I realized I was probably never going to be the kind of mom who is going to be a real, like very strategic about easing back into the school routine. It would always come as kind of a surprise to me. I'd be like, wait, right. What? We got to get back on like some kind of a schedule, huh? And so I would just kind of keep my expectations of all of us and myself pretty low for like the first actual week or two of school. I was not great about creating a longer on-ramp or transition. And you know what? That was okay. Like it wasn't perfect. It probably is not something anyone would write a how-to parenting article about, but we got through it and we've always enjoyed our summers like to the last moment, like milking every little bit of laziness out. And then we switch pretty quickly and pretty nimbly to the kind of organization and go, go, go you need for those first few weeks of the school year. So that's how we've done it. I don't know that I would recommend it as a strategy, though.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, though, that you say that because this year, my oldest is in kindergarten. So it was our first kind of major transition to fall. And I tried to do it the other way where I was, mm-hmm. you know, front loading it, trying to get everyone on a schedule weeks early. And I honestly don't think it made a difference.
Yeah.
We were still just like a huge mess for the first, we're like on week three now, and we're still kind of flailing around trying to find our feet. So you might actually, you know, have the hack that no one would think is the hack, which is just well, do nothing.
Don't you think sometimes we make things like harder on ourselves sometimes by trying to plan and get in front of problems that aren't necessarily problems? And then you realize you just went through all this planning and work. And then In the end, you still had to suffer through. Like you didn't divert or get around the struggle. The struggle was going to happen no matter what. So
Yeah. And I think the preparation was almost more for me because mm-hmm. it was all going to feel new to my kids no matter what I did.
Yeah.
There was no way for it to not feel like a totally foreign experience. So
I think one thing I've gotten a little bit better about is, like you just said, preparing myself. I will hit a point of the summer where I'm just done. Like I cannot sleep in one more. I don't really sleep in anymore. That's not a thing I'm able to do. My body just wants to wake up, but I can't like lay around for one more day. I can't have one more day where I'm just eating whenever or whatever the things are that I am just so over. I think what's different about me now is I realize I can change myself without changing everybody else, and mm-hmm. I can do things for me. And that doesn't mean everybody else has to be on board.
Wow. That's a great point. Yeah. That's great. Cause the school year is a big change for us and the kids.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, to kind of switch topics from that, I would also love to hear about the transitions that take place in your home. I think especially during the fall season, because that's what we're in right now. And I've heard you talk before about how you have, you know, certain systems for transforming like the decor and the vibe of mm-hmm. what's going on in your house for each season. And I have always wanted to be the kind of person who does this, but I have always done it like way too late. It'll be like December and I'm like pulling out the Halloween mugs and I just cannot get myself on a schedule. So I would love to hear your tips, your strategies, how you do that.
Yeah. Well, I think this is one thing where have like actually experiencing four distinct seasons really helps. Because I don't have like a schedule. I'm literally looking out the window and seeing like, oh, it's a little cooler today and just has that kind of fallish vibe in the air. And I think it's time for me to go get out my fall tablecloths or whatever it is. One way that I keep it, that I make it happen is by keeping it really simple. I don't have to go shopping every year to get new stuff. I don't have a ton of things. They're all in a place where I could easily get to them. In fact, for a long time, all of my seasonal stuff was in one box and I would just swap out the pieces that were in season and put away the stuff that was out of season. So it wasn't even like I had to go find like a box full of fall things and a box full of spring things. It was like it was one big box of all of it. And a lot of things are kind of transitional. So you mentioned Halloween, but like there are things that are kind of fall, but not exactly Halloween. So maybe there's like a cornucopia out all through September and well into November. And then just for a brief moment, the Halloween stuff comes out. Mm-hmm. I do feel like that was harder when my kids were little because we just had more of that kind of stuff. Like the kids were always bringing home things from school that could get added and then I would keep those things. Or the costumes were all mixed up with the Halloween decor, which again is two different things. Like you might want to have Halloween decor up all month, but you don't have to get the costumes out till the last week, right?
So it's
like where you keep those things, I think, can matter. I also think that it can happen slowly. So like maybe at what I feel is the beginning of the season, and for me, that's going to be different from anybody. It's really hard when the stores are telling you that that fall starts in July. Because then if you're like me, and maybe you're like this too, Catherine, you rebel against that. You're like, it's not fall yet. I am ignoring that. And it becomes like white noise. And then you miss that actually now it is October. So the season actually kind of came, right? So I feel like the school calendar kind of is a good thing to keep an eye on to tell me what's happening. And I might start really basic. So maybe I'll put a different tablecloth out and then it's a different candle that comes out. And then when my kids were little, one of them would bring home something from school that was a little more seasonal and that got put out. And then maybe I get some cut flowers and I can tell it's like right now the flowers I'm bringing home are end of summer flowers, whereas a couple months ago they were spring flowers, and all of those things kind of add up to the vibe. But I keep it pretty simple and that helps me actually follow through.
For sure. And I'm starting to wonder now if I and other people who live in places with like essentially one season, right, could kind of do these mild decor changes to help me feel like I'm actually experiencing a new season and moving into the next one instead of just kind of skipping it entirely.
Well, and you know that I'm a big fan of like old school magazines. And I think this is like a great reason for that, because it tells you, if you pick up an issue of, you know, Better Homes and Gardens or something and flip through it, it's reminding you of what's happening little bit in advance, but not so far in advance that it's dumb. And then it's like, oh, right, it's time for mums or whatever the thing is. And yeah, in Michigan, I just also happen to have the advantage of physical reminders all around me of what's happening.
For sure. Yes. So I kind of on the same vein as that, and you probably already talked about this a little bit, but do you have any tips for people who kind of feel, you know, I think we live in the world of like Pinterest and Instagram and there's like this expectation that, you know, I don't know, your family somehow benefits from this like Pinterest worthy, you know, fall garlands everywhere and stuff. And I guess, do you have any tips for like how you can curate this over a long period of time without breaking the bank, or just kind of like dealing with that comparison anxiety, I guess?
So I have realized that there's a few places where I really enjoy indulging in seasonal things. And those things would be things like bringing in nature from outside. So like a flower, a little potted plant, something like that. I'm really into tablecloths. Those are a really easy way to switch up a room, and you don't have to have a ton of them and you can use them year after year after year. And candles. And then what I hang on my fridge. So like, it's very, I don't have rickrack. Is that the word I'm looking for here? I don't have stuff all over the house, and I don't feel a lot of pressure to be out buying new seasonal things every year. It's really little touches, and especially little touches in the rooms I spend the most time. Another one is switching out my kitchen towels. So that's something I do probably three times a year. I've got some that are like generally springy summery, and then I've got some that are very fall, and then I've got some that are very wintry. And then that's kind of, that's just kind of it. And I don't buy new ones every year. I just put away the old ones when it seems like it's time, and bring out the ones that are from last year. And if I'm at the store and I happen to see something I think is cute, I might buy it. But I didn't go out like, now it's time for me to completely redecorate my house for the season. It's time to hit up Bed Bath & Beyond or wherever people go for that kind of thing. And I think like it's looking at those pictures and being inspired without feeling like you have to copy. And especially without feeling like if it doesn't look like that, then you're failing. I'm thinking back when my kids were really little and we were really broke. And so seasonal decor would be, I would send them outside and tell them to bring me back like rocks and sticks. So we would have like a little display of what they, or pine cones or whatever they thought was interesting. And it was just stuff from outside. It wasn't even anything I spent any money on. And actually, you know, kind of artfully arranged can be really effective. And then at the end, you just toss it back outside where it came from. So I think just like taking the pressure off and keeping things small and simple is probably the place to start. And starting with the stuff you really enjoy. So, you know, maybe some people might really enjoy having wall hangings or different curtains or different throw pillows. I only buy new throw pillows every few years. That's not part of my every single season swap out strategy. I do it in different ways.
Awesome. This looks like a good time to take a break. We'll be right back.
Sarah, I was just thinking about being a mom of little kids during the busy back to school season and how kind of lonely it can feel. Little kids with older siblings can feel really left out, and moms of kids who aren't school aged yet can also feel a little bit left out. There's all that contagious back to school energy that everyone wants to tap into, and I think our sponsor KiwiCo would be a great way to channel that feeling with their creative learning projects for kids.
Oh yeah, Megan, you're so right. And I really remember those days of having babies and toddlers who want in on that back to school energy. We've talked a few times about the fun projects KiwiCo makes for older kids, but they also have fun learning projects for ages 0 to 24 months and 2 to 4 years old. Katie on our team got to try a koala crate for her 2-year-old Charlie, and it was this adorable doctor's kit with a bag he could decorate, a checklist for giving a checkup, and little wooden tools like a stethoscope and an otoscope. Katie really appreciated the cute bag to keep all the pieces in and said Charlie has had so much fun playing with it.
Oh, I love that. Well, we know play is such an important way for little kids to learn about the world around them, and KiwiCo makes it really easy to help your kids learn new skills, build new experiences, and create connections to the broader world. Not only does KiwiCo have all ages covered, but every topic area you can think of, from weather to animals to art. You choose your plan, and the new crates are delivered in the mail every month. There's no long-term commitment, so you can pause or cancel anytime.
Make every month a new learning adventure with KiwiCo. Get 50% off your first month plus free shipping on any crate line with code THEMOMHOUR at KiwiCo.com. That's 50% off your first month at KiwiCo.com, promo code THEMOMHOUR. Megan, we are welcoming back our sponsor, Scholastic, who just released the 5th book in the Total Mayhem graphic novel series. This series is hilarious. It tells the story of Dash Can Do and his friends Rob and Greta, who have to use their ingenuity and inventions to defeat enemies and solve mysteries every day at school. Each book tells the story of a different day of the week, and Total Mayhem number 5, The Total Ice Cream Meltdown, was just released.
Yes, the series is so funny, and it would be a big hit with kids who love the bad guys or a Captain Underpants. And Sarah, the artwork is so cool in these books, too. World-renowned artist Ralph Lazar is the author and illustrator, and he does such a great job telling the story with his pictures.
So Scholastic sent us some early copies of Total Mayhem number 5 so we could get a sneak peek recently. And our team member Katie snuck it into her 7-year-old's backpack before their road trip. When he found it, he was so excited he could not put it down while they were driving. And then, of course, his little brother wanted to see all the pictures.
Oh, that's awesome. Listeners, if you're looking for a fun adventure series for your kids to really get into, or if they already loved the first four books, you're going to want to check out Total Mayhem Number 5, The Total Ice Cream Meltdown. It's perfect for kids ages 7 to 10 or kids between 2nd and 5th grades. That's Total Mayhem Number 5 from Scholastic, available wherever books are sold.
All right, we're back. So my next question for you actually was one that kind of came to me. I was visiting a friend in New York this past weekend, and I don't do a ton of farmers market shopping here, which is kind of bizarre because I could do it all year. But one of the things that felt very seasonal about her apartment was that she can only farmers market shop in the summer. So she has all this like fresh fruit and bread and flowers. And, you know, she made me like a salad with peaches in it. And I'm wondering if you have, you know, if you do a lot of seasonal shopping or if you try to cook seasonally and how food plays into your experience of the transitions through seasons.
Well, isn't it funny how when you could do something year round, it's almost like less likely you will do it at all. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Just to kind of give you some, I don't know, like backup there. I don't think that's unusual. If it's always available, it doesn't feel special, then it's like easy to forget. So when it comes to cooking seasonally, I love to cook seasonally, but it's just so easy here because the other option is to buy things that aren't local. So I try to buy as many things as I can locally. And even the grocery store makes that pretty easy now. Like you can walk down the aisle and you can see if there's like a bushel of like green beans, it'll say from a local farm or whatever. And you start to get an eye for what are the things that are there year round and look the same all the time, which is a pretty dead giveaway that it's not from here and it's probably not in season, or the things that come and go. And if you pay attention to it, it starts to become pretty obvious. So there is the farmer market, the farmer's market thing. And here we have farm stands, which I know is different in every state. And I will say, like, when I say a farm stand, I mean truly a local farm where there is a little, you know, wooden stand out in front where you go buy their stuff. Sometimes I know that it, in some areas of the country, farm stands can kind of get a bad reputation because it could be literally anything. Like, it sometimes is a little bit predatory because it looks like they're local, it's local produce, but it could be imported and you don't know what it is. So here it truly is like a local farm. But the farmer's market or CSA, which is like when you buy a share from a local farmer, and you have all that stuff where you are too, I know. But when you do that here, you truly, like the season, the growing season is so short. And yeah, peaches were just really abundant like 2-3 weeks ago. And having an amazing fresh grilled peach when you know you have like a really short window to get that. Or blueberries for me, when I know the window of time that I can get access to blueberries is going to be short. And after that, they're going to be imported and just not as good. It's like a driver. It makes me want to do that. And I think it ends up tasting a lot fresher. And it just feels kind of a little more, if I'm going to live in a place that does have a short growing season where you don't have access to produce year, like fresh produce year round, then I want to at least take advantage of what's great about that, which is stuff that tastes amazing when it's in season and not so much when it's not. So that's, it's kind of like a mindset shift, you know? And I think it's just easier to do when you have to do it that way. Whereas if you didn't have to, I could see why it would fall off the radar.
Yeah. And I wonder if you have talked about this with your kids, but we used to vacation in Northern Michigan when I was a kid. And I remember eating cherries there that there must've been a cherry, you know, somewhere that grew cherries nearby, but that's like a very core memory for me as being a child on the beach in Michigan, just like covered in cherry juice. Yeah. And I'm wondering if your kids have any of those experiences, like if they associate certain foods with like growing up in Michigan in the summer.
I'm sure they do, but I wonder if they know it. I have a feeling, because for me, it was wild blueberry season. I mean, you could go out into the woods and just find wild blueberries, patches of wild blueberries, and they're even harder to find in lower Michigan where I am now. But when I go back up north, you know, that's something that's very special and it's short lived and you can't do it the rest of the time. But I don't know if when I was a kid, I knew that It wasn't till like later you have that nostalgia looking back and say, oh, remember when we would go pick peaches, or remember when we would go to the U-Pick and get blueberries or strawberries or whatever was in season. I sometimes wonder if my kids recognize that that's not how it is everywhere. I kind of doubt it. I think it's the kind of thing they'll probably get one day when they're older, but they don't get it yet.
Yeah. Yes. You're probably right. So kind of on that same vein, I am wondering about what you love the most about cooking in certain seasons. And we don't really have fall here, but I'm a huge chili fan. So I'll like cook a pot of chili when it's like 90 degrees in September. Although I think it would taste better if I was, you know, somewhere else.
Yeah. Crank up the air conditioning.
Yeah. Sit in an ice bath and eat it. But
yeah.
I'm wondering if you have a favorite season for cooking, or if there's certain things that like eating whatever item it is in a certain season is just like magic to you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that fall, like when it starts to get cold fall. So for us, that's, you know, like mid-October is where it starts to get, I would say, brisk. And then by November, we're having legitimately really cold days. So that's when I feel like chili or stew, soups, roasts, my big old slab of meat with potatoes and veg on the side. Like that's when that all comes out. And I love cooking that way. And I cook that way up until, you know, April, like until it starts to feel like it's time for something different. And then I feel like May through like October is just grill season. You just throw everything on the grill because everything tastes amazing on the grill and it's so easy. So I love both of those seasons for very different reasons. I feel like the flavors I'm wanting, say in June, July, August, even into September and October, are a little less congealed and more distinct and more based around fresh produce, because that's really when we're getting, you know, our abundant produce is starting like in late June, really kicking off in July, and then goes through September. So you have a really wide variety of stuff that you can get access to during those months. And then after that, it's like, okay, now we're digging out the root vegetables that are looking a little weak. they're looking a little, that carrot's looking a little bit limp. So let's put it in a soup or a stew. I love them both for very different reasons.
Yeah. I'm sure you've talked about this on other episodes, but I can't remember one specifically. Do you do a lot of just like, here's what I have, let me make something kind of cooking year round? Or are you more of like a recipe person?
I'm really not a very much a recipe person, because I'm really bad at following recipes, really bad at it. I don't know what it is. I have like a mental block where I will look at a recipe 75 times while I'm trying to follow it. And then I walk away and go, wait, what did it say? And then I have to go back and look at it again. And then I will literally sometimes turn away from the recipe and I've already forgotten what I just read.
So yeah, for sure.
I tend to kind of, now that I've been cooking for a family for so long, I'm really good at improvising. So I will go to the store and say, okay, this meat is on sale. These vegetables are in season. That's what I'm going to start with. And then how am I going to arrange it? Maybe it's going to be a mix of, just kind of something I've done in the past and I'm just going to improvise on it. Maybe I'm going to keep it really, really simple. I know that this is going to taste great on the grill and I'm just going to put the veggies on the side and maybe make some rice or something like that and not overthink it. So kind of both, but I think I wing it. I think it looks like winging it more than it actually is, if that makes sense.
Got it. Yes.
Yeah.
And are your kids pretty adaptive eaters? Like, are they okay kind of moving through the seasons with you food-wise?
Yeah. Yes. They don't all love everything, but they'll all find something to eat. So I don't do a lot of things. I've just never been the kind of cook who's making like complicated meals where everything is in one dish and there's like a sauce. That's just not the way I typically cook. So there's always something they can kind of pick out. And if there is a sauce, it's on the side. And there's certain like exceptions to that. Like they love Indian food. So if I make, say, like butter chicken, which is like the simplest and most accessible thing that I can, well, first of all, it's the simplest thing I can make. That's an Indian dish, but also it's really accessible for kids. They'll eat the whole thing. They love the chicken and the sauce. If I was making something else, maybe I would lay off the sauce and just have the chicken and the sides. And they don't all like equally love broccoli or whatever, but they'll all find something that they like to eat. And it's actually kind of funny. When they were little, they all had their things that they really liked and their things that they didn't. And I would let them eat off of each other's plates. So I would literally let them swap food at the table and somebody would get all of somebody else's broccoli because somebody, you know, Owen always loved the vegetables. He was not as into the meat. So Owen got all of Will's broccoli and Will got all of Owen's, you know, chicken or pot roast or whatever it was. And that worked for a long time. I would say now they all kind of just eat what's in front of them. They're pretty good that way, which is not to say they didn't go through picky stages because they did. I just think it was like, it was more like when they were two. And the way around it then was if they were really into white foods, they got a lot of white rice or they got bread with butter. And I didn't stress about it too much. And by the time they were all in elementary school, it was not enough of a thing that it made meals stressful. It was still a thing, but like it was just like a background thing that I was able to not pay too close of attention to.
For sure. I think that's reassuring to me and probably other parents who are kind of in this phase. Cause we, as I'm like gearing up for winter and thinking of like, oh, here are all of the great things that I enjoy eating in the fall and winter. In the back of my head, there's always that like, you know, but this one won't eat beans and this one won't eat ground beef. So
And I remember having years where it was like, okay, well, I would make, you always have a side, right? So I'm going to make chili, but I'm also going to have a plate of cornbread. And I know everyone's going to eat the cornbread. And then maybe one kid is going to pick all the beans out because that's all they want to eat. And then maybe one kid's going to pick all the beans out because they don't want to eat it, but they're still going to get their piece of cornbread. And then the end, they're all going to get food in their stomachs. And nowadays, they've all kind of outgrown that. And I think that's the hope, right? Because you hear if you don't expose them to everything when they're really little, they'll never branch out. Their palates will never develop. And I just don't think that's true. When I was a little kid, I went through phases where all I would eat was Velveeta for like a really long time. I remember that phase. And I certainly am not in that phase anymore and haven't been for a really long time.
Yes, that's great. So one of the other things that I'm wondering, especially when it comes to fall, because when I think of fall, that's around here, at least where we have the most opportunities to go to festivals and pumpkin patches and all kinds of things. But it has been one of my favorite things to do, to have those opportunities to take the kids out to all of these fun activities. But now that I have three, and especially with the baby being the age that he is, and the pumpkin patch is opening down the street from me, lugging everyone to the pumpkin patch sounds a little bit miserable. So I'm so curious how you, as a mom of five kids, were able to manage seasonal activities. If you have any tips, like what you chose to do and what you didn't, and how that worked for your family.
Yeah, I mean, the struggle is real with that. So there were a few tactics, I guess, or just a mindset that I had toward it. And one was that those things don't happen. They don't have to happen every year to count. If you only ever take your kids to the pumpkin patch once, it still happened. It doesn't have to be something you do every single year. So just take the pressure off yourself and try something. Like, don't feel like if you do something and then never do it again, you've created an expectation or you've set a precedent or somehow you're going to, you know, be failing if you decide the following year it's not the year to do it. It can happen once. It can happen four times. It can happen on the years you feel like it, like on the years the weather cooperates. It all counts, right? It all adds up. So that was my first one. And then the other thing is that sometimes things meet their natural expiration date. So maybe there was a reason why going to the pumpkin patch or going to see Santa for this one magical window of time was great. Maybe your kids were just the right age, or maybe the kids that were at the age to enjoy it were the right kids to enjoy it. Not every kid enjoys all of these things exactly the same. And so like, if it's okay if it's something that was fun and now it's not fun anymore. And if it's not fun for everybody, you don't have to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that just taking that pressure off is so helpful. We stopped going to see Santa, I want to say, like when Owen was a toddler, because he wanted nothing to do with it. And I thought, well, this is just torture. Why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. And then I think Clara actually got to go to see Santa with her grandma. So I didn't, that's another one. You can lean on like other people to do those things. And that still counts. The county fair is a big one around here. We have like a really big youth fair with the Midway. It's not huge or anything, but for a youth fair, it's pretty big. And it's a week in the summer that everyone looks forward to. And some years I would take the kids, but some years my stepmom would take the kids. And some years my mother-in-law would take the kids. And some years we didn't go at all. It was like, it's a fun thing to do when it works. But if it's not fun, you cannot do it. And I think just letting yourself off the hook is like the number one tactic there for just keeping your expectations in check.
For sure. And I think I have a little bit of guilt sometimes about the youngest because I feel like the others got to do these little kid things when they were little that now they've kind of aged out of or are about to. And in my head, I'm like, oh, he's going to miss that thing that we did when, you know, everyone else has the picture next to the pumpkin or whatever it is. Right. But then at the same time, I guess we're doing different things that he's tagging along to that the other ones didn't. So,
right. And maybe there'll come a point where the older ones will be older enough that you can have some one-on-one time with the youngest and like almost get like another shot, like a retry at the end or a redo to do those things in a different way. And kids don't magically stop enjoying things just because they're 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever age it is. Like those things can be enjoyable quite a lot later. Also, a lot of it they're doing in school. I had to remind myself that my kids' preschool class also went to the pumpkin patch and my kids' kindergarten classes also went on nature walks in the fall. And like there was a lot of things happening that didn't have to be on my watch and the kids were still getting those experiences.
Oh, that's such a great point. I didn't even think of that. All right. So I have a question about the markers between seasons that are important for you. And I know that a lot of us, myself included, kind of use holidays as our, I guess, points of transition between, you know, fall and winter and spring. And I'm wondering if that is true for you, if, you know, like Thanksgiving and Christmas are important transitionally for your family, or if there's other, I guess, like events or things that are happening that are significant in that way.
You know, the hard one always was for me. I always felt like, and I don't know if this is going to answer your question, but I'll just speak to it. I always felt like the fall was one big, you know, like blur of fun activities and a lot of change. So you start school for us. It's always been early September. That marks like the end of summer, at least the end of summer vacation. Pretty quickly, it feels like fall. Then you're going into Halloween. Then really quick on the tails after Halloween, it's Thanksgiving. Then you've got Christmas and New Year's. And then there's just this long slog with nothing until Easter, you know, and a lot happens between January and April weather-wise. And it's also a very long, dark time without a lot of breaks from school. Mm-hmm. So I wish I had been thoughtful and strategic about that, because I think that was a really rough time for me as a mom of young kids. Valentine's Day was not going to cut it. I needed something more. And I don't know about you, where you are, but here, spring break used to be, I know they're changing it. They're making it earlier now for elementary kids, but we didn't get spring break until April. And I was like, man, we really need this. Like we need this in like February or like the end, you know, maybe the beginning of March. It really needs, we need a break, right? Mm-hmm. So we would just kind of ooze into April. I will say that one thing that really shook up the monotony for us was snow days, which you don't have.
Right.
But we got a lot of snow days. And some years we would have so many snow days that like there was a threat that we would have to, the kids would have to go to school longer at the end of the year because we had something like 2 weeks worth of snow days. And that's really actually fun for me as a mom, or was, you know, it was fun to tell the kids there was a snow day. It was fun to know the night before if it was going to be a snow day, because then everyone kind of felt like you got a night you could stay up late and watch a movie. And the next day it just kind of broke up the monotony, but you can't plan for those. And some years you don't have any. So I wish I had like some amazing advice to give people, because I know it's such a slog. I do think there probably were little things we would do like, oh, we're all going to stay in on I don't know, Saturdays and play board games. I think there were like things like that that I used to do. I remember going with my my brother and his wife and their kids to this brewery on Sundays all through the like really snowy period and like the kind of gloomy early spring and playing board games. It was one of those like really family friendly breweries, and the kids would play board games at one table and the adults would play at a different table, and the kids would each get like a bottle of root beer and the parents would all get a beer. And that felt like just having little rituals like that really helped, but it wasn't something where like I looked way ahead and had it on the calendar as something to look forward to. And probably that would have been something we would have all liked. I bet you Sarah is probably the person to ask about that, because it seems like the kind of thing she'd be really good at.
Yeah. And I'm curious, because when I think back on when I did experience seasons, that's the same one for me that sticks out as like February, March, April even was always like, oof.
Well, I think this is why if you're in a more, I guess, liturgical, you know, faith where you're really following a calendar, that's why those calendar holidays are so important. You get a whole month for Advent. You get all the lead up of Lent to Easter. You need the Lent more than you need, like,
right.
You need the part where you like, you're showing up every week with something new to think about and something to do, because that is a dreary, dreary time of year. So I think any traditions or routines and rituals you can put around that time, even if it's something little like every Tuesday night is, you know, we're going to watch a movie in our pajamas at 7 o'clock or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I think really it helps more than we know. When it's happening, we don't realize how helpful it is. It's when we look back at it that we realize. And I think that's true for parents as well as kids.
For sure. Yeah. And it's interesting. In the past couple of years, the school district that I live and worked in added an extra week of break in February. And I think it was more of a push from the teachers than the you know, local families. But that, I don't think I even realized I needed it until I got it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wow, this is exactly when we need to take a break from school.
Yeah.
Here it's nice because it's interesting. It does still get kind of blah in February. And I think it's what you're describing. Like it's that you're kind of on the come down from like all of this excitement of like fall and Christmas. And then you're like, oh, there's nothing left. So even though we can, you know, we're not necessarily stuck inside here, it is interesting that there's still kind of that mood of, you know, meh.
Well, even without being stuck inside, I could see how having nice weather year round could start to feel monotonous too. Like either way, it's like, is the monotony that it's cold and gray and dreary and you're stuck inside? Or is the monotony that just that the weather hasn't changed significantly in so long and there's nothing on the calendar? I mean, they're both monotonous. So
yes. And it's always fascinating to me that we'll FaceTime with my parents or something in winter and the kids will get off the call and they'll be like, oh, they're so lucky that they live there where it's snowy and it's cold and they can go ice skating. And, you know, it's just whatever you have is the opposite of what you want, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So my last question for you is a little bit silly, but I'm curious about your answer. And that is, if you would have to describe yourself, like your personality as a season, which one would it be? And then also, would you describe any of your kids? Or I'd also be curious to hear about your partner, if like you guys have the same seasonal personalities.
Okay. Well, this is a great question. For myself, I think I am spring, because I'm like a little chaotic, but like eternally, and I'm kind of all over the place as far as like my moods being kind of up and down and a little bit unpredictable, but I'm eternally hopeful and optimistic. So I feel like that's very spring. I feel like I'm thinking through my kids and trying to assign them each. My daughter, Clara, is probably, this is going to sound really negative and I don't mean it to, she's probably like a fall getting towards winter, because she tends to be a little pessimistic. Like she's very enjoyable and sweet and great to be around, but she's can be kind of gloomy and she's like looking forward to more gloom. I would actually put my boyfriend Eric in the same category. Like he's great. He's like a great fall day. He's just like the best person to be around, but mentally, you know, he's already like storing up nuts in his head for when things turn, right? Owen's probably more like a winter. He's very just like matter of fact and crisp. I mean, this is like kind of a, I guess, a very figurative exercise,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Will's just like a sunny summer day. He's just chill. He's like, here I am, you know, like take me or leave me. I just want to have fun. I want to enjoy myself. I want to do when I think about, oh, Will, and I think about the summer, it's like he's just going to do exactly what he needs to get done, no more, no less. And that's kind of how I feel about a summer day. It's like it just encompasses what it is. It is what it is. And then Isaac and Jake, man, now that they're adults, I really have to step back and remember, like, what were they like as kids? And is it the same now? I think Jacob is a lot like Clara. They have a lot in common. And I think a lot of it is that easy to be around, yet like they tend toward a little melancholy. So I'm going to put him as a fall. And I think I'm going to say Isaac's a spring like me. I think of all my kids, he's probably the one most like me. Like maybe a little all over the place, isn't quite sure what he wants to do, but he's optimistic and hopeful for the future. So there
you go. Interesting. And is he your oldest?
He's not. Jacob's my oldest. So okay. Jacob and Clara are like the bookends. They're very similar. They even look the same. They both have dark hair and kind of pensive faces is the only way I can
put it.
That's
so interesting.
And then Owen and Isaac look a lot alike, but are very different personality wise. And then Will's just in the middle, like, hey, brah, like, come on, man, let's get on the surfboard. I mean, he is such a summer. It kind of kills me thinking about it.
Yeah. I love that. And I love that about, well, it's funny. I feel like I might be a kindred spirit with your daughter because I would also describe myself as like a melancholy fall to winter. But my husband is a summer. So I wonder if you were to like, you know, expand this metaphor to partnerships, if that is a common pattern.
I bet you it totally is. Because opposites do attract. And also I think we all find either comfort or excitement from people who are very different from us. Mm-hmm. Did you do this exercise with your kids too?
You know, I didn't. But I could do it pretty quickly. My middle child, I mean, my kids are 1, 3, and 5. So
they're emerging.
Right. Like, who knows what they are? But my middle child feels the most like me. He is a little grumpy in an endearing kind of way. And then my oldest is much more like my husband. She's very chipper and positive. Nothing phases her. She's, you know, there's not a lot of peaks and valleys. I would describe her as a summer. My littlest, I mean, he's 16 months, but he's chaos. I might describe him as fall because I think of like weather changes. I don't know what I'm going to get every morning with the littlest.
So that's very similar to Isaac, my now 22-year-old. When he was that age, he's actually the one, I don't know if you've seen that picture of me carrying a screaming 3-year-old, one that got turned into a meme.
Yes.
That was Isaac. And I would have said it was also, I wasn't sure where that changeability was going to go when he was a toddler. And it went toward being a little more chill and optimistic rather than so he became a spring rather than a fall, but I could have seen it going either way.
So. Oh, wow. That's reassuring. Yeah. That's helpful. Because some mornings I'm like, I don't know, man.
Which kid am I going to encounter this morning?
Right. Yeah. And do I have the energy to make it through the storm? But
I love it. Well, Catherine, this has been so fun. Thank you for interviewing me today. This has been a nice change of pace and it was really fun to hear your questions.
Yeah, it was so great talking to you. Thanks for having me.